They have a set and clear vision and mission. So from the housekeeping staff right up to the executives that we spoke to, they can recite the vision, which is that the needs of the patient come first. Quality is very much their business strategy. It's their state of being. And they've built the processes, infrastructure, norms, and beliefs geared towards achieving the best possible outcome.
Welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast dedicated to showcasing healthcare quality improvement across northern British Columbia. Casting today from the traditional territories of the Kleklaytané and Tsintiaan First Nations are your hosts.
I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Lee Cameron.
You're listening to QualityCast North. Our subject today is the Mayo Clinic. From a healthcare quality perspective, it's one of the most reputable and respected multi-center institutions in the world. So what are the secrets of their success? To find out, the doctors of BC recently arranged a visit to the Mayo Clinic in Arizona for a group of BC physicians. And to talk about their experience, key learnings, and their takeaways, two of those physicians have kindly joined us today. With us are Dr. Kayla Blackstock, a family physician, and the physician co-chair and QI advisor for Northern Health's PQI program and a regular on this podcast, and Dr. John Huang, a general surgeon at the Royal Columbian Hospital, Vancouver, previous physician QI advisor for Fraser Health, and the current board chair for the Doctors of BC. Welcome to both of you, and thank you for joining us today to talk about your recent visit to the Mayo. We're going to jump straight in. And so let's start the discussion around three broad topics. And in each case, we'd love to hear about the things you learned and how you think we could apply them here in BC. So let's start with a big one, culture. Now, what makes the Mayo's culture so distinctive and how does it relate to high quality care? Can we start with you, Kayla?
Sure. Thanks, Cher. Thanks for having us. It's actually kind of nice to be on this podcast with the four of you because Lee and John really got me started in QI. So it's really neat to come kind of full circle here with you, John, on this podcast. And then Cher, I basically am just following in your footsteps and taking all the jobs that you're finished with. So anyways, it's just what a fun group. And I just wanted to start off by saying that the Mayo trip was such an incredible experience for me. And I'm so, so grateful for all the hard work that was put in into organizing it. And one of the biggest takeaways that I had from that trip was learning about their culture and how deeply quality is embedded in their culture. I mean, the whole organization just oozes culture oozes quality, I should say. And to be honest, I didn't know a lot about the history of the Mayo Clinic before I went on this trip. And in learning more about the Mayo brothers who built up the Mayo organization, you can really just see why or learn about why quality is so foundational. I mean, they set the precedent. They built the organization that was a foundational component. It was really important. They each took turns going out and finding new and innovative ways to improve patient care. They made it clear that patient care was at the center of what Mayo wanted to do. And you can just see that still going on today. You know, at Mayo, they expect quality. They advertise quality. They constantly measure it and they're constantly trying to improve patient care. One of the things that was interesting, the leaders that we heard from told us that clinicians do often have to give up a little bit of their autonomy when they join the Mayo organization. Because quality is so important, you need to be on board with their core values, and there are behavioral expectations that need to be met. And so you basically have to drink a little bit of the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, really, to add to what Kayla had to say, you know, they have a set and clear vision and mission. So from the housekeeping staff right up to the executives that we spoke to, they can recite the vision, which is that the needs of the patient come first. Quality is very much their business strategy. It's their state of being. And they've built the processes, infrastructure, norms, and beliefs geared towards achieving the best possible outcome. So we saw evidence of that with their Quality Academy, which was one of the key features of our visit there, to see how they actually train their staff and physicians in quality methods. But they're also dealing with a lot of stuff that we're dealing with here in BC and with Doctors of BC programs with, how do we equip our leaders to do what they need to do? They're talking about concepts in quality dosing. So from, again, the very high levels to frontline staff and support staff, what level of quality training do they need? And then they all speak sort of the same common quality language. So again, a lot of the things that we're trying to do here in BC, they've already kind of shown us the way at Mayo Clinic.
That's yeah, okay. That's great. I mean, that's really interesting to see how it runs through. And I particularly like that comment about how everyone speaks the vision. Everyone understands the vision. It's a one-liner and everyone can understand it in a very, very simple way. Quality care for the patient at the center. Thank you. Okay, well, let's move on to the subject of organizational infrastructure. So how is the Mayo Clinic organized to allow them to perform at such a high level across its institutions? Maybe we'll start off with you, John, this time.
Yeah, I think one of the points of Doctors of BC sending a cohort of, I think there were 25 of us, Kayla, down there was to study their physician leadership. And this is something that Mayo does really well, that they're known for. And we wanted to see what they were doing around physician leadership and then try and imagine what the possibilities would be if we were to do that in British Columbia. So they have something called a dyadic model in which physician leaders are paired with an administrative partner. And so, what makes this model so effective? Well, to start, we can't understate the importance of having that unifying vision. So they're all moving in the same direction. And if you don't buy into that vision, again, the needs of the patient come first, and frankly, you're not at Mayo. And you're certainly not in a leadership position. So I think that was really important. In terms of like leadership competencies, like we all learn in medical school, it's one of the seven CanMeds competencies that physicians are supposed to be leaders. But I think they take that to a different level. So while we were down there, you heard terms like adaptive leadership or leading in perpetual crisis or innovational leadership. So they're pretty much up to speed on these modern theories of how to lead innovative, high-quality organizations, and that applies to their physician leaders as well. And, to some extent, we do that here in BC through Doctors of BC. We have programs like the Beattie and Sauder physician leadership programs. They've also given a lot of really intentional thought to where physician leaders should be positioned in their system. So they have a pretty good sense of where they need physician leaders and why. So they have physician leaders installed right from the top, where they have on their board of trustees and governors, all the way down through executive leadership, departmental leadership, and even sort of on ground level working groups. They have physician leaders with a pretty defined job description and defined roles. So in my visit there, when I was speaking to some of these leaders, they weren't really talking about any misunderstanding as to what their role was. They never said, "I'm just a tick box," and they don't really have a useful role. They all sort of bought into what they were doing. And then finally, I think there's a lot of work towards empowering those physicians to do their job properly. So I think that's where the dyadic model comes in. Physicians have a very specific subset which gives them a lot of influence and power in the health system, but there are things that we don't know how to do, like running a multi-billion dollar organization for the most part. They're funded well, they're set up with the right connections and networks to do their jobs properly. So, just again, really thoughtful, intentional design about around physician leaders, what competencies they need to be effective, what roles they need to take, where they need to be positioned, and then what structures actually need to be placed for them to be maximally effective. And I think, in British Columbia, we're kind of partway there. We have some programs that give us the competencies we need, like the BD and SOTR, but also PQI. So a lot of very engaged and willing physicians, but maybe we fall a little short in terms of getting them into positions of influence and power, and then setting them up for success after that.
Yeah, good insights. Anything to add to that, Kayla?
It sounds like John and I learned the same things, had the same takeaways from Mayo. Correct me if I'm wrong, John, but one thing about the physician dyad that I also learned was that the physicians are still clinically active. And I think it was actually a requirement that the physicians had to be clinically active so that they really have, that in the trenches knowledge that they need to be in that role. And just echoing what John said, the physicians were embedded in leadership positions at every level of the organization or every level that they needed to be, and they had a meaningful voice. And then I guess another thing that was different, other than the formalized dyad structure, was they often had triads as well. So it would be the operational leader, the physician, and a nurse as well, who was also clinically active, but in that leadership role. And we heard from Mayo that the nurses were a really important part of driving the culture and change management and quality improvement at Mayo. And I think that's something that our system here in BC can look into a little bit, or learn from Mayo a bit more as well.
So, keeping with quality, let's talk about safety for a minute, if that's okay. And from your perspective, what does a Mayo do differently to achieve such high levels of safety across its organization? And Kayla, do you want to lead out with your thoughts on this?
Yeah, when I was thinking about safety at Mayo, one thing that really stood out to me is their data collection and accessibility. We use this quote all the time in QI teaching: if you can't measure it, you can't improve it. And they have all the data they could possibly want, looking at safety measures, patient outcomes, patient quality. And I think, from my perspective, them having that access to their data is really beneficial in terms of them achieving those safety standards. They also have, as part of their culture, they encourage reporting. They encourage reporting incidents. They encourage reporting near misses. They share the data. It's known that it's used to improve patient care. And they do smaller things, like they celebrate near miss catches by staff.
Yeah, I think it is, like we talked about earlier, really ingrained in their culture. Even though their mission statement is around the needs of the patient coming first, they do that by taking care of their staff. And you can really tell, talking to the staff there, that they really believe that. They will do anything to keep their patients safe and to keep themselves safe as well. There is a so-called just culture there, where they know that it's not a punitive relationship. On a monthly basis, their equivalent of a PSLS system, they're actually looking for minimum numbers. So if you're not reporting enough near misses and safety incidents, that's viewed as a bad thing, because that's how they learn. So again, I think it's just built into the way they do things. It was so impressive to see.
Can I just add to that? And you mentioned this before as well, John, but they value psychological safety in their staff quite highly. And that's all part of this too. You have to feel safe in your organization to be able to report things. And it was really obvious the effort they put in to making sure that their staff felt psychologically safe. They had built in, and I guess this speaks to the last question as well about their organizational system, but they have built in communication channels feeding up and down. So there's closed loop communication on issues or problems that are brought up, which I think adds to that culture of psychological safety that they have at Mayo.
Interesting, hey, the link between that data that's available and the psychological safety and the safety of the patients. Super cool. So moving on, what other things struck you, Kayla and John, and your takeaway from the trip? You know, like whether it's education, leadership, safety, and what else?
Well, I'm not sure if you've ever been to the Mayo Clinic in Arizona, but it's out in the middle of the desert between Phoenix and Scottsdale. It's this huge chunk of land, literally in the middle of nowhere. And frankly, I was a little surprised that they didn't have better eating and entertainment options available. Like, that was shocking to me, but it doesn't really seem to affect the way they function, which is good. But no, again, I was really... I think culture is an overused term, but it really does describe what they do there and how they're able to do it. They are obsessive in their desire from the top right down to the bottom to improve. And really, you could tell from the way the executives spoke right down to the service staff that it was, you know, they're a living manifestation of the quadruple aim. Like, that is what they're all about, and they are single-minded and focused on it. So that's really what I took away. And, you know, coming from BC with its unique set of problems, sometimes it is frustrating or you feel a little hopeless coming to somewhere like Mayo. But one of the sessions was around their 40-year journey towards quality, and how, you know, for the first 10 years they were literally just sort of wandering in the desert and doing environmental scans, and then phase two was sort of a focus on quality improvement capabilities, and then, you know, the third decade was really around taking some of their wins around quality and then spreading them across the organization. And it's sort of at the beginning of their phase four now, where they're leading experts, they're world beaters, and they're showing the world what they can do. And you realize, looking at what we're accomplishing in BC, we're sort of on a similar trail where, you know, we sort of investigated quality, we built quality capacity through programs like PQI that Kayla and I have graduated from. And now, yeah, we are focusing on spread and thinking about things like, how do we empower physician leaders? And hopefully in 10 years, we're in the same boat where, you know, we're world beaters, and we're actually going around and telling people about what we've done in BC. So the trip really did end on a hopeful note for me as well.
Yeah, you know what? I thought I might be a little bit cynical, thinking, yeah, but it's an American system, and it's private pay, and they have all of this money to do all of these different things. And I really came away similar with hope that there were a lot of things that I saw in how they operate in that organization that don't cost a lot of money. And maybe culture is overused, but it was culture driven, and it was expectations and how things were organized. And there's so much of that that we can bring back that doesn't necessarily cost money, which was really, I was surprised and really happy to get those, gain those understandings. And, you know, another thing that I loved about Mayo is just how innovative they are. They just seem to try things or have good ideas and just go for it. You know, one of the quotes, I was frantically writing down quotes because I felt like they had so many good things to share, but they encouraged us not to ask ourselves, how do we make what we have better, but think about how healthcare should actually look and then go towards that instead of just, you know. So it was just things like that, where they would give us just a different way to look at things. And then also, even just in terms of patient care, and John, what you were saying about how the focus really is on the patient and that's their core vision and everybody buys into that. You could see that. I could see that The second you just walk through the Mayo doors, you know, there's soft music playing. The walls are painted with not, you know, it's not all chipping. There's artwork on the walls. There's people there to help. Just the small things like that as well were patient focused, and sometimes we forget about those things, and they matter. The experience of patients in our systems and our facilities matters, and their comfort matters. It's easy to forget about some of those small things when there's some big fires in the system.
Yeah, thank you for those. Those are amazing things you picked up on, and thank you for sharing those with us. That's great, John. I think I can imagine all the CEOs of all the health authorities in the province sighing in relief that a high quality food and restaurants is not a prerequisite for high quality care in their institutions and cities. And thank you for that hopeful, that very hopeful perspective as well, Kayla, which leads us into that final question I have for you, really, which is, looking forward, I mean, what is it going to take to bring the Mayo Clinic levels of quality, all these things that you've mentioned and talked about today, what is it going to take to bring those levels of quality to BC? And you mentioned time, maybe one of those things, and being patient and that 40-year journey. But yeah, don't hold back here. We all know that Rome wasn't built in a day, but what's it going to take?
You know, we need clinically active physicians to have a real and meaningful seat at the table and a voice that's heard. And John mentioned the leadership training and the work that Doctors of BC is doing in that regard. And I think that work needs to continue. And we need to get into the rooms where those decisions are being made. I think also we need to listen more deeply to patients and actively seek their feedback. And when I say we, I mean kind of as a system, but everybody in the system can do this. And I think we need to actively we need to respond to that feedback. We can't solve all the problems all at once, but I think having some closed loop communication between physicians and other clinicians, anybody who works in the system, patients seeking their feedback and then responding back to that feedback, I think that's really important. And then I guess the final thing I'm thinking is the data and the access to data. To have more robust data and more easily accessible data, I think, would be really helpful to get us closer to how things are operating at Mayo, or closer to our own health system's vision of patient care and quality care.
Just adding to what Kayla said, I think the physician leadership piece can't be understated. For those who have spent any time with me, they'll know that I have a pet theory that so much of what ails the health system in BC is because physicians have been absent in leadership and stewardship roles, and I think we need to be there. And we need to have really serious conversations about, what physician leaders need to be doing, because, we, by virtue of training and our position and our status, can be immensely influential, and we just have a knowledge of the way things should be fitting together. So, we have to think about how are we raising up our physician leadership colleagues? How are we supporting them? Are we putting them in the right positions? And then are we empowering them to do the work that they actually need to do? So, a lot of discussions around that at the health authority and ministry levels and the Doctors of BC as well. And then I think the other really serious conversations we need to have are around the future of our profession and the culture we want in medicine. And this probably starts with a discussion around what our unifying vision is for the health system. So, at Mayo, again, they talk about the idea that the needs of the patient come first. And so I think individually and collectively as physicians, we have to do the same thing and decide, well, Is that close to our guiding principle as well? Are we really, really willing to make the changes necessary to build a system that is really geared towards patients and is patient-centric, instead of something that is geared towards our own well-being? That's a very, very challenging thing. I suspect isn't something that most medical associations are geared towards.
Thank you for that. Really, really appreciate those insights that you've brought today. And there's a lot there that we can think about and take away and really start building on, I'm sure. And, it'd be lovely to be able to talk on about this for a lot longer. But unfortunately, we have only a limited amount of time. And I can hear the closing music coming, which means it is actually time to wrap things up. So a big thank you to both of you, our guests today, Drs. Kayla Blackstock and John Huang. It's been a pleasure having you both on the show. But until next time, it's goodbye from us here at QualityCast North. I'm Sherry Chewy.
And I'm Lee Cameron.
If you enjoyed today's episode, check out our other episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts, and subscribe to our channel. We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question for us about healthcare quality improvement, email us at qualitycomms@northernhealth.ca, and your question could feature on a future episode. QualityCast North is sponsored by the Physician Quality Improvement Initiative, or PQI. PQI is a flagship program of the Specialist Services Committee, a collaboration between the Provincial Ministry of Health and the Doctors of BC, with representation for the provincial health authorities. This episode was co-produced by Dr. Sher Chewy and Lee Cameron, with technical support from Levi Giles and Matt Walker of Expression North. Original music by Daniel Chewy. Further information about today's guest is available in our show notes on our website at nhpqi.ca.